like to welcome you all to this, I think this is the seventh of these Sufi gatherings. And like most Sufi things, there's a sort of exoteric and esoteric, outward and inward aspect of a gathering like this. And Pia Zia and Imam Bilal were telling me earlier that part of the tradition when different Sufi groups come together is to have a party. That is kind of the old hundreds of different Sufis come together, they have a party. Well, so this is kind of our, I guess, rather slightly sober North American counterpart of a sort of traditional Sufi party, just coming together because there is something very, very special when Sufis come together. And it is the coming together of different traditions, and there is something very special in that. In the West, there is a tendency to be isolated within one's own individual practice, one's own individual tariqah, which is understandable because that is where the work is done, that is where one's commitment is made, that is the path that one follows. And yet at the same time, it's important to, in a way, step out of any limitation that has just to be together in a broader context, this knowing there are all these different paths, all these different threads of love, as I have said sometimes, that together weave a bigger tapestry than any one individual tariqah, than any one individual path can create. It is like there is a reason, there is a very profound esoteric reason there are all these different paths, all these different spiritual vibrations, and that Sufism contains many, many different ways to love God. So that is the recognition of that, the remembrance of that in this culture, which tends to isolate one, which tends to focus on what you have for yourself. It is important to remember that we are part of this bigger company of friends. And just as we come from different parts of the country, from different parts of the world, so we also embrace these different ways to go home, these different ways to love God. It's very, very important. It is like we are stepping into an era of universality. And Sufis have always been the pioneers of love. We may think we come from this ancient, ancient tradition, which we do, but at the same time, we are pioneers of the heart. We always take the heart into places it hasn't gone before. It is part of the work of Sufis, this people of the secret, to take that secret where it needs to go, not just for ourselves, but for the world. And this is where I would like to, in a way, take you also into the esoteric part of this gathering, which has been put together for a very particular reason. When the Masters of Love put something together, they have in mind a purpose that belongs both to the moment and also to the destiny. Just like as when you come to the path for yourself, it is both that moment of your own soul. There is really only that moment of your own soul when something within you is touched, when something in you is awakened. And there is also the whole destiny of your soul. If you knew how precious that moment is, when the whole destiny of your soul is there, held, and in a way breathed on by the grace of the tradition, by the grace of the Sheikh. It is then in that breath something comes alive. You are given a possibility you never had before. You think you are doing a spiritual practice or following a spiritual path. That is how it appears. but you are drawn into this extraordinary mystery of love. And what you don't realize is you are drawn into it not just for yourself. Because one of the cornerstones of Sufism is that we are never here for ourselves. It's not about us. And there is a purpose about a gathering like this that is not about what it appears, that is not about us, that has the hint I was given at the very beginning of these gatherings, 8, 9 years ago now, was that Sufism has something to contribute to North America, to this culture. It has a very, very, very specific contribution. And although we each in our own way make this contribution through our own practice, it can only realize its potential when different Sufi orders come together. Then, if you like, another note or like droplet of love can come into the spectrum of consciousness that belongs to this country. And I say that very specifically. A droplet, a note of love can come into the spectrum of consciousness that belongs to this country. And you know in yourself what happens when you are given such a droplet of love. This extraordinary, pure frequency of divine love. How that goes into your consciousness and changes you in the most unbelievable way. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. You are drawn into this arena of love by that very taste, by that fragrance of love that will change your life forever. That is the essence of the path. And just as it is for you individually, so it is also for the whole. Because that is the tradition, the relationship of the microcosm and the macrocosm, the individual and the whole. Now, Sufis traditionally, for many centuries, have played a hidden role in, if you like, the geopolitical dramas of the world. There was a time in the Middle Ages when the Qajaran played a more open role, when the masters of love were more visible, but then forces, circumstance, the need of the time, they withdrew. And although that note of love was present in different ways, it was more hidden. And the purpose of this gathering is really just to be a vehicle for this note of love. It's very, very simple. Spiritual things are always in their essence very, very simple. So it is like there is this ancient tradition of Sufis coming together. And as I learned this evening, there is this ancient tradition of Sufis coming together and having a party. And within that, there is this esoteric thread that it is not about us. It is really about the beloved. And that's what I want to kind of take your attention towards. And I know this is, for many people, this is just like theoretical. Because we are drawn into the arena of love, we are drawn to the path through our longing for God. That is how it comes to us. That is what touches us. We want something. It is the most primal urge you can really have. The reed torn from the reed bed. This is what draws us back to God. We want something. It is really the one desire that is most important. All other desires you can in the end leave behind. But that desire you are allowed to have. You are allowed to be greedy for love. And we want it. It's as simple and as primal as that. We want God. At least that is how it appears. And I always remember, because when I first met my teacher, Mrs. Tweedy, And I saw something in her eyes. I was 19 at the time in this little room in North London with the trains going by, rattling the windows of the room. And I saw that she had something and I wanted it. It was as simple as that. I wanted what she had. And I was prepared to sit and to meditate and to pray and to meditate until I got it. That was how it was for me. It was very, I wanted it. I looked in her eyes. I saw she had access to something else that was not of this world, not of this sensory or mental world in which I had lived. And it evoked something in me, it touched something to me. And I wanted it. At least that is how it appears. And that is how it is for each of us. We want something. And that is what makes us do the practices. What makes us get up in the morning and meditate, to do the prayers, to make our life a sanctuary for love. We want it. But there is another dimension to it. And I want to, if I can, take your consciousness into this other dimension, because that is why we are here. And just to read you a few little fragments. And the first one is this favorite one I have of Bayezid Bistami, who was one of the great early Sufis. At the beginning, I was mistaken in four respects. I concerned myself to remember God, to know Him, to love Him, and to seek Him. When I had come to the end, I saw that He had remembered me before I remembered Him, that His knowledge of me had preceded my knowledge of Him, that His love towards me had existed before my love to Him, and He had sought me before I sought Him. Now, if you allowed that awareness into your consciousness, He had sought me before I had sought Him. If you can just be with that, it will free you from so much because you realize from the very beginning it's never about you. Your spiritual search actually has nothing to do with you. It is always a response to a call. We are the echo of the Beloved. Our whole spiritual life is the echo of the Beloved. It is never about us. And what is so important is if you can take that into your consciousness. And it's very difficult because we live in a culture that says, it's about you, it's about me. And that has kind of crept in even into the spiritual arena, where our spiritual life is about us, is about our progress, our transformation, our realization. Of course, when something in you has been realized, then you realize it was never about you. It couldn't be about you. Then you realize that this I is the veil, is what separates you. But that can take many, many years till you fully realize that, till that veil is torn apart, till that veil is burnt. But why not, from the beginning, allow that fragrance of belonging to God to be present? That fragrance of His love affair to come into your breath, to come into your prayer, to come into your devotion. And suddenly from the beginning you can say, realize it is always about Him. And you don't have to carry this burden of a self, even of the seeker. It doesn't have to be such a burden. Again, it's very, very difficult for our Western consciousness because we are conditioned from the moment, not from the moment we are born, we usually get a couple of years of grace, but very, very early on, what do you want? And so the focus is on ourselves. And that is what we take to the path, not knowing it is not about ourselves. It was never about ourselves. The spiritual journey has very, very little to do with us. It is about the beloved seeking himself, discovering himself, realizing himself, or herself, however you like to call your beloved. And then from the beginning, you are then in this bigger arena. You are in this bigger horizon. At the end of the journey, if there is such a thing as an end, you will be fully conscious of that. You will see how the you is just a bubble that can get burst. It's just a ripple on the surface of love. And the ocean of love is completely different. In the ocean of love, there is no you. There is only the beloved. But we have this tradition behind us that can point our attention to that. That can make us aware from the beginning, that can give us this hint of his presence, of his love, of his longing. Rumi said, "During the day I worshipped you and did not know. I bided the night with you and did not know. I always supposed that I was I myself, when indeed all along I was you but did not know." So simple. I was you but did not know. And that not knowing is like the purgatory we lived through for so many years. Until one day we step outside and say, "Oh, it was never about me. What a fuss I made." Now why, if that happens on an individual level, if that is about your relationship to God, why does it have to stay on an individual level? If your whole spiritual life is just an echo, is him coming closer to himself, then what does that say about a gathering like this? About an intentional spiritual gathering? It means it is about the beloved. It is about the beloved's purpose. And then one can breathe a great sigh of relief because you don't have to carry it anymore. Have you ever noticed the weight of your own spiritual destiny that you feel you have? The concern you have to trying to live it, to follow the right path, to get the right guidance? It is quite, you know, that's why I always go back to this vision I had after many years on the path when I saw this coffin on which was written "spiritual aspirant." It is such a burden that we think we have to do it. It is also, I discovered, part of the American work ethic, this Puritan work ethic. You have to do it yourself. And thank God we don't, because when we try and do something ourselves, look at the mess we make. So if we are on our own individual journey for his sake, in a way it is his journey that something in us is making. It is not our journey. We don't even know the way. We don't even know where we are going. So if we can begin a gathering like this and kind of breathe out all our individual concerns, leave them at the door, if you like, along with the shoes. That is actually one of the ancient traditions of when you take off your shoes to enter a sacred space, you leave behind all of those concerns. I guess nowadays, your concerns along with your cell phones and whatever. And you enter into a space that belongs to God. And not your prayers to God, but his relationship to himself, which is unfolding in time and space in this dimension. That is really what it is. I was a hidden treasure and I longed to be known, so I created the world. And for some reason, the world has forgotten that. And the world rushes around thinking it's its purpose. And Sufis, we are the keeper of the secret. We keep the secret of love for the world. And the secret of love is that it is his secret. It is our beloved's secret. It is our beloved's relationship. It is really not our relationship with the beloved. He sought us before we sought him. He loved us before we loved him. He draws us back to himself until we realize there are no two. There is no lover and beloved. There is just his revelation of himself. And this is one of the great experiences when you see how he reveals himself within your own heart and how little it has to do with you. Suddenly you are taken out of the arena of yourself into the arena of the beloved. And you wonder how you could waste so much time, so many years, so much effort doing something so useless as seeking God, when it is just him revealing himself within your own heart. But if you can take that individual secret, individual realization, and take it into a group, take it into a coming together of Sufis, then how much more potent it is to be a space that belongs to God, that is God. Here, now, in space and time, not as something abstract, not as some ideal, but as a deep recognition of the heart, as a deep recognition of the mystery of love. Because this gathering is for his sake. Yes, when you go home and you do your own individual practice, that will have the illusion of taking you along the path. And that is an illusion you need to live with for many years. Here, there is a different kind of sharing, a deeper empathy that recognizes something the world has forgotten, that recognizes one of these simple, deep, mystical secrets, that there are places where he wants to reveal himself to those who love him. Very simple. Except when we hold that consciousness that the world has forgotten, then this note of love can come into our heart, not just our individual heart, but also into our collective heart. It is very, very precious. I go back to what I said at the beginning. That note of love can change your life. That's why the Sufis say, just take one sip of the wine of divine love, and you will want nothing else for the rest of your life. That is why it is so dangerous. That is why the Sufis say, keep away from the lane of love. Because that is the purity of his love for us. It's incredibly pure. It is the purest substance in all the seven worlds. And what it can do to you, and many of you know what it can do to you. Yes, it can scramble your brain. It can tear your heart apart. And it can also reveal to you the greatest, deepest secret of being a human being. It can take you from the pond where the frog lives happily into the infinite ocean of love. Into an ocean so vast, so beautiful, so endless, you cannot even dream of it. Into an intimacy so tender and so sweet You have no words for it. And as I say, there has always been this secret dimension of Sufism, that what belongs to the individual belongs to the whole. And if we can just hold that secret, that very, very, very simple secret, that note of purest essence of love, and we can say, world, this is what we have to give to you. We're probably not the brightest people. We're not the cleverest at our economics. But this we can do. We can give back to the world, back to this country that is so troubled, that is so torn apart, that is so distorted, that is chasing so many shadows. What has been forgotten, and what we carry within our own hearts. This is the greatest gift you can give. Just like it's the greatest gift that can be given to you. It is the greatest gift you can give back to the land where you live. Back to the land that is so sacred and yet has forgotten that quality. So something can come alive again that belongs to God. That is all. Just like something in you becomes alive that belongs to God. That is what wakes you up, when something in you comes alive that belongs to God. It doesn't belong to you. It is not you. It is the Beloved. And yes, it is a secret, but it is a secret that belongs to the universe. Because that is the note of love that holds together the whole universe, that holds together every cell in creation. But just as you can forget it, so can the world forget it. And just as remembrance can be given back to you through the grace of your teacher, through the grace of God, so can remembrance be given back to life, be given back to the world, and then the mystery of God's revelation of himself can wake up. So that is one of the reasons we are here together, to bring that mystery of love, that droplet of pure love, into this time and this place, because some things have to happen in time and in place. And whatever happens in the world, we hold that place of love for his sake. I think that is one of the duties of being a Sufi. Whatever else we do, we hold that space of love for the world. And we hold it individually in our own prayers and our own meditations. And we can also come together. And just for this brief moment in time, this blink of an eyelash, hold it for the whole. I'd just like to share with you a very simple Sufi prayer by Ahmed Attar. You and me are brethren on the path. Take from me this advice. Imagine the world as a green sphere within which there is nothing but you and God. Just imagine the world as a green sphere within which there is nothing but you and God. Then remember God until the vision of him takes over. He will then cause you to pass away, and only he will remain. So just stay with that for a moment. The world as a green sphere. We are here in nature, it is easy. The world is a green sphere. And in this green sphere, there is nothing but you and God. That is all. Like my sheikh said, in the whole of the universe, there are only two, lover and beloved. Nothing but you and God. And you live with that until his vision takes over. Because you are so insignificant. It is all about God. It's not about you. It never was. It's all about God. Everything is about God. And then that energy, that power, that presence, that love that is his love takes over. And if we can really live that, even just for a moment, we give the world something so precious. His remembrance of himself. That is all. So if during this weekend, as we come together in different ways, as we share different qualities of divine love, as we weave together these different threads of different paths, different ways to belong to God, different ways to love him, to seek him, to praise him, there are so many ways. If we can hold within us this deep knowing that we are here for his sake and it is all about him, then I think we make an offering of love. And what else can we ever make but an offering of love? It is all about him. It always was. Somehow we forgot. So let's try to remember. Let this gathering be a remembrance that all there is our beloved. That we can step into that circle of love and be there together as spiritual friends. And then maybe he can breathe with his love on this gathering of his friends. Breathe his prayer into our hearts and into his world. And his prayer can change and transform the world. He knows his name. Thank you, Pierre is now going to read us some memories of love.